Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Natto. Saturdays at the Spa is brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play. And Pinnell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Good morning and welcome to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you. Closing weekend here at Saratoga. Where'd the time go? We expanded the meet 8 weekends now, and we blinked, and all of a sudden here we are. Woodward Day, as Anthony Mormino and I talked about on the Handicappers Report. They've done a phenomenal job, really. It's been about 10, 12 years now that where they really amped up closing weekend. They brought the Woodward up here. I think we said 2006 was the first year, so time's going by fast, but they've really amped up that closing weekend with several graded stakes. The Woodward today, the two-year-olds come center stage. The Spinaway tomorrow, the Hopeful, of course, closes it down on Monday. We've got a good show here. We've got I talked to Todd Pletcher yesterday for about 10 minutes in the paddock after actually he debuted Freewheeler, who looked really good. New York bred City Zipper winning a turf sprint. So we're going to go to Todd real shortly here. We've also got Travis Stone coming up at about 10:15, and I'm excited to get him on here because, as I'm sure you're in the loop, the Empire Six, which of course you can bet at Capital OTB Bets, the Empire Six pays out on Monday in a mandatory day. The carryover going into today is already 558,000. So we're going to be closing in on 750,000 to $1 million carryover, assuming it doesn't get hit. And so that means on Monday, closing day, mandatory payout day, I think I might be hard-headed on this. I think $7 million is in play because, you know, two Sundays ago when they did this as well, the rains hit, we washed off the turf, the field sizes got absolutely pummeled, and they still put in close to five. I think it was four and change. I think it's going to be big balloons on Monday. So Travis and I are going to go through that sequence and give you some ideas, give you some tickets, give you some thoughts, because it's a great bet on Monday. You can say what you want before Monday, okay, about the takeout and things like that, but at a 20-cent base bet with literally millions of dollars of dead money in there, it's a great bet. So we're going to talk about that, and then to wrap it up, I'm psyched that Mark Cassie made the time to stop by. We really appreciate that. He's got a live horse in the Spinaway that just came in, Perfect Alibi, who won the Saratoga, the Adirondack, excuse me, the Spinaway tomorrow for the Gal. So Mark's going to talk about that. He's got Stormy up at the Woodbine Mile, who looks so awesome, winning the four-star Dave over males up here. So we've got a, we're kind of all over the place. We've got Taped with Todd. Travis is stopping to talk pick sixing, and Mark right here to talk Spinaway in Woodbine Mile. So let's start it out right now with Todd Pletcher. We got him yesterday in the paddock. He's got three today in the Woodward, as well as kind of talking about the meet going forward, looking back. Let's hear what Todd Pletcher has to say about the Woodward and so much more. Happy to be joined by Todd Pletcher on what's a busy weekend, closing weekend, and a busy Woodward as well. Fresh off a win here in Freewheeler with a nice debut victory, so congratulations on that. Going to saddle three in the Woodward. Thoughts about it overall going in?
You know, it appears to be a very wide-open race. I think all three of our horses are training really well. Looks like a competitive race. Should be an honest pace. Yeah. I think everyone should get, you know, the kind of trip they're hoping for, you know, at least on paper. So, you know, just kind of sort it out after the break with our three. And similar running styles from all three. They're not on the lead types, but they're horses that want to get some forward position.
Let's start at the top, Vino Rosso. I mean, going in, your best chance, not that the others aren't with big chances as well. Talk about his Whitney, a good third behind what I think everybody thinks a divisional leader, McKenzie.
The outside, and then comes Monongahela down toward the rail. Around the far turn they go. Preservation is the leader. McKenzie comes under pressure. Vino Rosso is there on the outside. Yoshida's coming wide. Monongahela's trying to dig in toward the inside in fifth. They're coming to the top of the stretch. Three quarters, 111.3. They're into the stretch in the Whitney. McKenzie, Preservationist, Vino Rosso, and Yoshida. And they're across the track, coming to the final furlong. McKenzie's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKenzie comes by the 16th pole. And he's going to do it. McKenzie has won the Whitney. Yoshida was second. Vino Rosso was third.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we were hoping to get a little better early position, and we knew we couldn't let McKenzie get away. Unfortunately, Vino Rosso didn't break great. Kind of worked his way back into contention. Kind of got right to McKenzie's flank at the top of the stretch, and then McKenzie still had something left. So, you know, I thought it was a solid effort. Maybe not as good as his win in the Santa Anita Gold Cup, but you know, solid effort nonetheless.
The blinkers come off today. I noticed, you know, as a younger horse, he seemed to settle a little bit more. And now as an older horse, a little more forwardly placed. The blinkers come off. I noticed a sizzling work on the 23rd. Are the blinkers off as a result of that, or were they off for that work?
They were off for that work. And we were trying to jazz him up a little bit, put a little speed into him, get a good sharp work. We just feel like, you know, he's an older horse now. He might be better off to kind of see everything around him and, you know, I think sometimes with these older horses, a little change of equipment sometimes put a little pep into their step.
You mentioned the Gold Cup at Santa Anita, a mile and a quarter.
A touch as Mongolian Groom takes fourth. Core Beliefs losing some ground. Passed by Higher Power and four more to Lone Sailor. Giftbox makes his move now, takes the lead. Vino Rosso coming after him. These two squaring off with Blitzkrieg dropping back in third. Then it's Mongolian Groom and Higher Power, Core Beliefs. Lone Sailor, Vino Rosso puts his neck in front at the top of the stretch. Giftbox will have to dig deep to keep off Vino Rosso, who comes to the eighth pole with the lead by a neck. Giftbox is back to second. Then comes Higher Power in third. They're coming to the 16th pole, and Vino Rosso edging away from Giftbox. He's coming into his own, and Vino Rosso at age four goes on to win the Gold Cup at Santa Anita.
We're a mile and eighth tomorrow, and we're a mile and an eighth in the Whitney as well. Is this a means to an end? I know you're supposed to run in this spot. I know you're legitimately 3-1, 7-2 in this spot, but is he maybe playing more their game in the Woodward and has you looking forward to Santa Anita, 10 furlongs, where maybe you get the best of it?
Well, you know, that win at Santa Anita going a mile and a quarter was big, you know, as far as plans for the Breeders' Cup Classic. So we know he likes a mile and a quarter. We know he likes Santa Anita. So we're kind of focused on what's the best way to get there. And, you know, is it to run in the Woodward and then come in real fresh? Or, you know, the other consideration was, do we wait for the Jockey Club and run once more at a mile and a quarter? Right now, this is where we've landed.
Sure. Bal Harbour comes in off a pretty good summer at Monmouth. Has he kind of brought you to this spot? He seems to be progressing.
Bal Harbour inching up a closer third. He's making a nice move on the outside, in fact. Suddenly, Lemonade Thursday is under serious pressure. Moongate Warrior's outside of him, and Bal Harbour has run right to the front with a quarter of a mile to go with a nice burst. War Story is trying to stay with him as Cole Front drops back to third, and then comes Moongate Warrior. They're a furlong from the finish. War Story, a tenacious customer on the inside of Bal Harbour, and it's an absolute thriller in the Monmouth Cup. Bal Harbour or War Story? Bal Harbour, War Story just won't surrender. He keeps coming back for more, and War Story out finishes Bal Harbour, and they were more than 10 clear of Cole Front in a thrilling renewal of the Monmouth Cup.
You know, if you look at the figures, he fits. Yeah. You know, he hasn't quite held the class level that some of these horses have, but he's training really, really sharply. You know, he's in good form, and we figured if we're ever going to take a shot at a race like this, it was the right time for him.
He drew well. You want to be inside going nine here. Wooderson not ideally outside, but a big alley dart.
Javier Castellano making this pace, a half mile to go and a length lead, but Backyard Heaven is whittling away on the outside, and now just a neck back, and now Backyard Heaven to the front, and Tom's d'Etat now moves with him, and the two of them take over around the far turn toward the forces given way. Wooderson is rallying on the outside within four lengths of the lead, and then it's back to American Tattoo. Candy Graham, Golden Brown is starting to come on too. two. At the top of the stretch, it is Tom's Data off the turn in front. A two-length lead as they arrive at the eighth pole. Wooderson is second. Backyard Heaven is third on the inside. And Golden Brown is fourth. Tom's Data and Joel Rosario come by the 16th pole with a two-length lead. Wooderson chasing him home. Tom's Data takes the Aladar in hand at the end. Wooderson was second. Golden Brown was third.
Does it help you draw a line through the Suburban a little bit?
Definitely. You know, the Suburban was a head scratcher. You know, even though he was a big price that day, we felt like he had trained well enough to be competitive in there. He didn't fire at all. I think it's important for him to get away, get into the race, get into good flow, and hopefully, you know, the outside won't compromise him too much and allow him to get into a good rhythm.
You have to be excited that at least on paper, all three of your horses are going to get first run on a horse like Yoshida, who, you know, the horse to beat. He won this race last year. You mentioned kind of just playing it off the break, but do you view him as the horse to beat, and are you comfortable knowing that, you know, all things being equal, you should be ahead of him at least going into that far turn?
Yeah, I mean, I think you certainly have to respect his chances. He made a big run at McKenzie and the Whitney as well, and he seems to really like the main track here at Saratoga. So, you know, I would agree that he's the horse to beat, but, you know, they're Modetam and Preservationist are also horses you have to respect. So, like I said, I mean, I think it's a race that you know, appears to have a, you know, a fair look to it in terms of everyone's going to get their trip.
The meet as a whole, I know you've won all the races up here, multiple training titles. You've done what everybody wants to do up here. How does Todd Pletcher take a step back at the end of the meet and look at it? Is it victories? Is it how the horses ran? What do you look at?
Well, I think you look at all of those. And, you know, we came into this meet kind of knowing that our success was going to be based on our two-year-olds.
Sure.
And you know, we didn't have a very good two-year-old crop last year, which, you know, has hurt us in the three-year-old division this year. But, you know, I like what I'm seeing as things kind of wind down. I was hoping some of the babies would get revved up a little earlier. But I do think, you know, hopefully September, October is going to – hopefully we'll come out of here with some horses heading in the right direction.
Well, that leads me to my next question. Has it changed a little bit for you, the program at least? I look at some of these horses – you had all sorts of success 2 years ago in the preps, you know, Vino Rosso, November at Aqueduct, Magnum Moon, January, Noble Indy, December. Have you changed your program? Is it just individual horses or what? Are you just now saying, you know what, I want to win these races next spring and in early summer?
Well, you know, I think our client base is focused on the Derby races.
Right.
And so, you know, when you're doing that, when you're purchasing those type of horses, you're not going to necessarily end up with a lot of five and a half, 6 furlong horses, Vino Rosso being a good example of that. So, you know, hopefully we can balance that out a little bit. Our depth isn't quite what it used to be. So, you know, usually we had those type of horses waiting while we also had some speedy, precocious ones. But, you know, it's one of those things, you crank them up too soon and sometimes it hurts you down the road. So we're focused on 3-year-olds, developing stallion prospects. That's kind of where our program.
I look at Soviet tomorrow. He seems to be that kind of horse. He's going to get better with two turns, a long-distance pedigree, kind of working him into the equation.
Yeah, we feel like, you know, getting him stretched out to 7 furlongs will help. It's been a little bit green. That's why we're adding the blinkers. I like the way he breathes with those, so hopefully we get an improved performance from him.
A couple quick hitters. Mr. Clancelot looked good winning a turf sprint. Moretti turf in two turns. Was it two turns for him and just getting out longer?
Well, I think in Moretti's case, it was getting on the turf. Okay. Unfortunately, the race before that came off the turf. He still ran okay, just got beat. But, you know, he clearly, to me, is better on the turf. And Mystic Lancelot, we were very impressed with his debut. Right now, we got him slated for the Summer Stakes at Woodbine on September 15th, and like what we're seeing.
An older horse IWC was really impressive, winning first out. Took a little longer to get to the races, but excited about him, too.
Yes, we are, yeah. He, you know, I was concerned 6.5 might be a little short. He was able to get up just in time doing that. To me, he's a horse that's, you know, it's all about two turns for him or stretching him out. So we'll look to run him back in allowance race going long at Belmont. And I think, you know, if he continues improving, could have a future.
And then lastly, you're going to bring back Air Touch tomorrow or the finale. Horse that showed a lot of promise at two. It took a long time to get back to the races. But, I mean, you look at him on paper, he looks like he'd be quite a talent.
Very talented colt. You know, he's a credit to Mr. Dobson's patience because we've had a number of setbacks. It's almost, you know, it's hard to believe it's almost 2 years now,
right.
Or it has been 2 years since he debuted, but doing great, and we're looking forward to getting him started again.
All right, good luck in the Woodward. Good luck going forward and the rest of the year too, Todd. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
BetWare's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region? Tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Birdstone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
It's a global series. The best races from all over the world, the best trainers, the best jockeys.
You can get a free entry into the Breeders' Cup, and everybody wants to run in a Breeders' Cup race.
You get your travel expenses paid for the Breeders' Cup.
Automatic berth takes a lot of pressure off.
If we're considering two different races, and one was a win and you're in, and one was not, that would be the tiebreaker.
It's probably the best thing that's happened to racing in the last 10 years.
Breeders' Cup Challenge, win, and you're in.
Use them all.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you. A special thanks there for Todd Pletcher for stopping by after a win yesterday with that, I mentioned that City Zip New York bred freewheeler who looked really, really good. And I thought Todd was very candid. And, you know, he always tells you what's going on. I'll bring in Travis Stone, my next guest here. And we talked off the air that, you know, Todd's a straight shooter. You have to respect that. You know, he gets a lot of pulled every sort of which way, but he's a straight shooter. I think he knows the Woodward today. We'll talk about it. We can talk about it briefly. It's a time to take a shot as well. So I think he's got a shot, certainly with Vino Rosso, but he's running a couple others in there, and you got to respect him for what he's done. And he's like I said, very candid with what he says.
Yeah, it represents the game well.
I think that's a great point.
You know, I had a very successful run there for a while. Clearly not the Todd from 5-10 years ago right now, which is sort of ironic to say because he has a Derby winner in the last handful of years.
Yeah,
but, you know, maybe you know, these things go in cycles. This game goes in cycles. So, you know, hopefully the things are starting to turn around for him. He's had a good meet with the two-year-olds on turf, which is a growing program here. So we'll see.
I think it's like, I don't know if you'll pick up on this, but it's like almost like Roger Federer when, you know, he would win 2 to 3 majors a year. And now when he only, you know, he went through a stretch where he won one out of every 10 or whatever. And we're like, oh, poor Roger. You look down, Todd's got 15 wins at the meet. You know, yeah. It's not like he's 3 for 70.
No.
But I think he set the bar so high.
The bar was so high, yeah. And, you know, like I said before, he represents the game well. Hopefully things can turn around for him. And, you know, he still has some good horses. He has some they always look good coming to the paddock. He takes good care of them. And like you said, he's a real stand-up guy and good to deal with.
I couldn't agree more. And yeah, don't cry for Todd just yet. He's doing okay.
Yeah.
Monday, I'm glad you could stop by because Monday is big balloons. I think I might be wrong. I was wrong a couple Sundays ago, but I think the weather clearly impacted the sequence two Sundays ago when they had to pay it off. And I kind of think maybe even because of that, they're really going to fire on what could have $1 million in the kitty by Monday. They're firing already. I think they got 100 yesterday to the carryover. It's 558 going into today's card. We had two more racing days. It's going to be a lot. What is your gut with the pool size as we pay off this Empire Six on Monday?
I sort of, my rule of thumb is anywhere from 2.5 to 4 times the carryover. But what's tricky about this particular bet, it's new in New York in this market, and it's the 20-cent level, so it can get a little bit hard to sort of forecast what the final pool is going to end up at, but it'll be big.
I also think it's Saratoga, it's closing, and listen, we love Belmont, we love Kentucky Downs, we love Churchill in a couple weeks. There ain't a lot going on after Monday.
No, so, you know, and not to throw cold water on it, but the other variable that we have to consider is the forecast is I don't want to say dire, but it certainly does not look like it's going to be today as of right now.
In
so
the
we'll
mix
see how that
to be rain.
Yeah.
So obviously take note of that. The first race, it's race six in the sequence on Monday, about 3:15 in the p.m. I think we all catch a break in here in that. Now, I don't know if they did this on purpose. Kudos to them if they did. We get to look at the tote board here, which I think is important because we have a field of 10 two-year-olds. None of them have run in the afternoon.
Yeah, you know, these are guessing games, yes, right? I mean, you have to try and grab whatever sort of info you can, whether it be workout reports, just, you know, trying to comb through the workout lines, trainers, breeding, stuff like that. I will say there's some pretty good and well-bred horses in here. Clifton Park's got a good family, but it seems to be sort of a more route-oriented
family.
Have
to bank it, right? Yeah.
Bank It, who obviously is a very good New York bred, yep, but again, a horse that excelled going a little bit farther. Awesome, again, a good route influence down inside. But one of many I feel like you have to use, and so I sort of did that. I thought it was interesting. Lacey Gaudette shipping up a horse with a good workout, two back for Runaway Star. Thought that horse was interesting. There's some pedigree on the six, Malibu Edge. And you move away to the outside, the 8 and the 9, Governor Morris and Secret Rules both have some interesting pedigrees as well and workout patterns that look like they're live. In spots like this, I mean, I don't know. I just can't sink my teeth into a very narrow group. I sort of got to spread in these spots.
I think you have to spread. I don't know if we can see Travis's ticket on the screen or not, but what he is spreading, 2, 5, 6, 7, 9, 10. He's got an expensive ticket. We talked about it all year. Should I put this out or not? It's a type of day where you're allowed to take a rubber band off the bankroll and peel a few extra bills, right?
Now, the other thing I'll say is, and this is a challenge, and you're friends with Andy Serling. He and I talk about this all the time. Presenting tickets and opinions on TV is very hard.
Yeah.
The chances of me taking $504 and cavemanning this thing is 0%. I'm going to move them around a little bit, do some A mains and backup Steve Chris style. That's just a guide.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. Clifton Park, I think, was my fourth A. I think he's interesting. He's named for a town 15 minutes down the road. You'd think maybe he could run a little bit. I don't know if that's a smart adage or not, but I always think that. Obviously, I think the post really helps Governor Morris too. I don't know if he's in here to win today. They paid a lot. These constitutions have proven to be very, very precocious. So I would think he can run a little bit. Where else did I go? I went with Max. Now, you did not use Maxim Milano down inside for Wesley, who's kind of been quiet at the meet.
You know what I didn't like about this? I didn't like the work pattern where there's a couple of turf works thrown in there. And I do have the opinion that if a trainer thinks the horse is capable of running on dirt at Saratoga, they're going to start on dirt. If they start to dance around the turf a little bit with workouts, it's because they don't think they're that sharp on dirt. And this is a tough draw inside. Yeah. Can't use them all.
And you would know better than anybody this, as a Kentucky guy, as good as Wesley is, you know, once we start hitting July, August, September, not as potent as April, May, and June. The other one, Secret Rules, I've heard could run a little bit. I think he's drawn well. You would think a fast son of Secret Circle, a Breeders' Cup sprint winner, right? So I thought he was interesting too. Again, you've got to see where the money shows. You know, Shug's not a first out guy. Kieran doesn't win anymore at firsters. But, you know, if horses like these take money, I thought you mentioned Runaway Star. I mean, I don't know, Lacey Gaudette coming up, shipping up on closing day at Saratoga's got to mean something, I would think.
Yeah, there's a couple of horses in the family that won. The dam was 5 for $25. It's not like it's a empty pedigree. There's some stuff there.
Yeah, so again, we were fortunate enough that we can see the tote board to kick off this sequence. The seventh race, the next leg, the second leg, I think is interesting because it's kind of what do you want to do with Rhode Island? You mentioned the A, B, and C angle. You know, I would think he's an A for you. How heavy do you want to be on a horse that's going to be favored, on a horse that's supposed to be favored, but now is dropping in class? And Linda, who always seems to improve him off the claim, hasn't gotten an inch of improvement from Shug.
No, which is hard to do. I mean,
Shug, well, it is hard to do.
You know, one of the best trainers of our lifetime. This is a sort of a defensive use for me. I don't particularly love him. The pace last time was fast, dropped a little bit off it, still wasn't quite able to win, and was actually, and I thought the comment was fair, repelled late. But a horse you have to use because the horse is in form, has figures that fit. I mean, Linda Rice hasn't moved up Shug, but Linda Rice is a very cagey trainer. Yes. Her horses are always ready to run. One of those you have to use. But I wouldn't mind seeing him get beat, given the fact the price would be somewhat short.
I would think so. What I found in this race was, A, I wasn't sold on Rhode Island. B, I didn't find a lot of speed. And I know Elmer J. Fudd needs to get a lot faster in a hurry. But Rudy put the blinkers on last time, and he forgot to stop. I'm just going to think Luis Saez puts him on the engine, hopes he doesn't stop. I thought from a profile, at least, he's interesting. And then if he can't see it out, Pipes is taking over.
It's interesting. You're right about the pace. So when I map out the pace on my form, I've got a lot of horses in the back half of the field. There's not a lot going on up front. My issue with Elmer J. Fudd, well, first off, this horse has been bet in all three of his starts, despite the fact he's had pretty, and I don't want to say bet like he was bet down to favoritism,
right,
but there was action there that made you think they thought he could run a little bit.
Sure.
That field last time was weak. I thought he pulled a pretty good trip. I'm sort of going to be against, but wouldn't be surprised if he comes right back and wins.
He's the old first or last to me. You know,
he's
getting beaten 30, or he might wire by two. Anybody else in here?
I thought I had somewhat of a creative idea, because I'm with you on Pipes. He's sort of an annoying horse, because that was a soft pace last time out, couldn't win, but obviously gets a little bit of class relief, I think, anyway, relative to this field. I thought False Info for Bruce Brown on the outside was just sort of a cagey, interesting alternative to some of these. There's a lot of turf running lines throughout his PPs that make him competitive in this spot, and that was a code red pace last time out. Pace was very fast, had no business being involved and sticking around to the end, and maybe second off the brief freshening off that sharp effort. You know, maybe he's an interesting idea to throw in there on a, you know, a backup type ticket that can really juice it up.
And he's the one, like, when you put tickets together, I always like to, you know, a lot of times I think we're guilty of putting tickets together and you look at it and you're like, I just got the four morning line choices in every race. And I like to just take a race and say, you know what, who is that funky horse that's going to blow it all up? And he's kind of the first one you're throwing out there. Because False Info, I would think, is every bit of 15.
I think he actually goes closer to 20.
Probably.
There's a couple
of
things going on. But it's interesting you say that, because to me, one of the best parts of building these multi-race bets is not only the handicapping component, but the strategic ticket structuring that you have to do. And you have to make decisions. You have to hold your feet to the fire. But you also have to understand that you're not just playing the horses. You're actually playing the races. And you have to find the race where you have to survive in advance.
Yes.
Survive in advance. That race feels a little bit like a survive in advance.
I agree with you. Now, let's go to the eighth, because I think this, at least to me, now you're going to disagree, so this is good television here. No singles, really, with the exception of, I'm kind of with you in race 10. We'll talk about it shortly. But if there's a single to me, I thought maybe it's Hayfield, because, A, I thought Hayfield was the most likely winner anyway, and now it's Service and the pink and yellow off the claim of Mike Dubb, and in a race where she's tactical enough, she was probably the best horse anyway. I'm not singling her, but I want you to talk, because you are seven deep, and it's kind of one of those deals where if you don't single her, you might have to be seven deep, because it's tough to come up with who else it is.
Yeah, so Jason's, I mean, we're not going to say anything earth-shattering here. Jason's Service is phenomenal, first off the claim, 18 for 50, 36% with an ROI of $2.80. If you narrow that focus down to Naira only, the ROI goes to 296. Amazing. Source is 0 for 6 this year. And it's not like this is Jason's Service off of a no-name barn.
Right.
Linda Rice
tough
is a very capable and good claiming trainer, as is Jeremiah Engelhardt.
Yes.
Jeremiah's his barn's really grown over the past few years. Happy to see that for him. He's a great guy. Nonetheless, Hayfield is 0 for 6 this year. She's a little bit older. She just missed last time. I don't know. I felt like this was a spot maybe to dance around a little bit. And like you said, though, these is one of those frustrating moments where could go 5, 6, 7 deep and he wins, and you're like, wow, I tried to beat Jason's Service.
Right.
But, you know, such is the path I chose.
The one horse I thought that was, I thought there was some speed in this race, but if maybe there's a speed of the speed, Miss Lily B for Chris Engelhardt coming down from Finger Lakes with tearing off 5 in a row. It's kind of the old hold your breath and see if we're still there at the finish line.
Yeah, I'm going to use, just because I respect the form that this horse is in, and Chris Engel's having a great meet. All of his horses seem to be running pretty well. But this is a bit of a deeper water here. This is a bigger field than she's been facing. She's been odds on in most of the races she's been in. She's going to be forwardly placed. I do think there's some other speed in here. She's in one of those defensive ewes, but try and beat a little bit.
You mentioned the race flow, and you kind of write it down when you're looking over sequences. How do you see this field? I always think 7 is, you know, very apt to fall apart in the lane. I thought there was enough speed in here to maybe, you know, Shelly Ann's going in some way, shape, or form. New girl in town. We know Miss Lily B. is obviously going. Starlight Mission is flash speed before. Puffery didn't break last time. You would think she's more involved. Outside Newport Breeze, Preston won last time. I think it looks like a lot of hitting going on.
There's, and here's the thing. The horses that figure to go aren't exactly reliable. There's a lot of question marks around them. I actually liked Puffery a little bit last time. She lost all the chance at the start. So I threw in there because that would be typical Saratoga to like a horse last time. I did have a creative idea. I don't know what price she's going to be. She's probably going to be a little on the shorter side. But Forever Change has had a couple of trips in a row, and she started out her career and started out pretty well. So, you know, when you can run well on debut and then followed up with two consecutive efforts right after that, tracking slow paces or not, she has some ability. And I thought she was a little bit dirtied up coming into this spot. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people they shy away from the rail going 7 furlongs at Saratoga. I'm sort of a nerd, and I like to look at statistics and analytics at time. It's not as bad as people think coming from the rail here, going 7 furlongs. Maybe not necessarily on the win percentage end, but horses outrun their odds a lot from down inside. And I thought she was an interesting horse that a little bit dirtied up.
And she's tactical enough where she's going to sit a trip. Charlie puts blinkers on. I always think a good horseman like Charlie Baker, when they make an equipment change, I think it's more meaningful than a run-of-the-mill barn that maybe is just throwing something on the wall and hoping it sticks. So I thought Bengal Gal was interesting. You did not come up with her. I thought she's a little slow.
Yeah,
I get that, but you draw a line through the turf race last time. I thought from a race flow perspective, I'm going to give her a little look at what should be a fair price.
Yeah, Stidham is 19% going turf to dirt route to sprint. The ROI is weak. I will say this. She gets a big move up on the depth chart if the racetrack comes up wet.
If it rains.
Yeah.
And again, you've got to check the weather or the forecast as well. We know how that can be.
Mm-hmm.
In Saratoga Springs, the Bernard Baruch is up next. Mark Cassie's got March to the Arch. He's coming right up after Travis. I had one opinion in this race, and that was Dream Friend and Noble Indy can't win.
No.
But they should set it up, I think, and anybody else can win.
I looked long and hard at making either of those two horses because I felt like there wasn't a ton of speed. They're both going to be forward, but they're not necessarily suicidal.
No, not at all.
Right? I've backed into, I think, which are the three logicals, just because I felt like the class relief and the ability of the three horses I use, March to the Arch, Curban, and Olympico on the outside, I thought they were just the best horses on paper. I don't like betting horses like Emirati second off the sort of the Euro ship. I think they tend to underperform and get overbet.
Yeah.
I think people, they see that one good running line and they just invest too much into that one running line. Don't look at the whole picture. So I was a little bit against that one, but I thought it was 1-3-7.
We've got footage of Sacred Life, I believe, running second to the Lure, and Luke Cullen is in raging form for Kieran right now off the layoff, and he's a real player in the division. I kind of thought this horse found himself late and made a bold run. I've used him. I'm with you against Emirati, but Sacred Life really came charging late. I don't know if he's that kind of Chad sucker horse, but it's Dub, it's Irad. I kind of think he's one of the ones that's going to benefit off that tightener, and now he's maybe a little more used to U.S. racing because I kind of feel like he found it a little too sharp for him last time.
That's not. I hear you there. And look at. I mean, like I said, can't use them all. He'd probably be the fourth use for me in a race like this. Coming out of a restricted stakes company, facing horses that have running lines with horses like God Stormy and Bricks and Mortar in there, it's no comparison.
Right.
And that's why I sort of backed into the more classier running lines.
And Curban hasn't won a race since he won this race last year. But just from a handicapping perspective, I struggle with horses like this. Because he's running his race, and he's been facing much better horses than what he sees here. And with the exception of the Manhattan, which was just simply a trip too far for him, he's been right there in all his spots, but, boy, he doesn't want to win races. How do you view those kind of horses? I struggle with them.
I hear you, but, you know, the Turf Classic at Churchill, it was raining around that time. The track was starting to get on the wet side. Ran a good second to Bricks and Mortar. Now, Bricks and Mortar is just eons the best turf horse in that division. A no shame second, and I felt like he had run so hard that day he regressed coming back into the Manhattan and sort of turned a corner again last time out. He's sort of a deep closer type. I don't think there's going to be enough speed in here, but I respect the fact that last race was an improvement. He liked Saratoga, won this race last year. He just felt like an interesting use to me because I think he actually might even offer value at this point in time.
He could, and he's going to get first run on certainly on March of the Arch and Sacred Life and Olympico as well. I want to believe in Olympico, and he's an A. Like I said, I'm using the five logicals. I worry that he's going to be left with too much to do on the cutback.
It's possible, but I do like playing horses off turf marathons, cutting back to the two-turn turf. That the stamina they get from those longer marathon distances often plays out pretty well. In fact, I think a Todd Pletcher horse ran well the other day coming off a marathon, cutting back a little bit. So, and, you know, find me a Chad Brown horse that doesn't finish.
I know. It's just, right? It's like a conveyor belt. He just keeps throwing them out there. I joked the other day after – I mean, I couldn't use significant form with the results, you know, the following day. And it's like she's the 20th best turf horse in his barn, and she's winning a $400,000 grade two.
I liked her. I used her. She needed every bit of that perfect trip to win, though. You know what?
She can't get lucky.
No. They went 5.5 with her last time, and that's too short for I.
Well, he said that. He did say that. So maybe I'm being a little too harsh on her. The 10th is the hopeful. Hope Springs Eternal, you know, these are three-year-olds, soon to be next year, Derby kind of horses. A lot of talent in here. We've got video of Greenlight Go winning the Saratoga Special. We talked off the air. He's your single. We talked off the air when, you know, Jimmy Jerkins is winning a grade two race with a juvenile in August. I think you better look out. Greenlight Go, there's so much to like about this horse. He showed last time he can rate. He looks like a three-year-old. I mean, talk a little bit. Yeah. About him and what he's done so far, and maybe what he's going to do going forward, too.
So I was standing on the horse path prior to the Saratoga Special earlier this month, and here they come. They're walking by, and they're good two-year-olds. They're obviously pretty well-bred. They're talented. And then here comes Greenlight Go. And I remember my buddy was in the paddock. I texted him. I said, you have to look at this horse. He looks like a three-year-old, if not four-year-old. Just so amazing. And then he followed up with a phenomenal effort. And one thing, I think one of the takeaways from this meet is I have really enjoyed seeing what I feel is a bit of a revival in the two-year-old dirt program here at Saratoga. Over the past handful of years, it seemed to have slipped away a little bit. I don't know if it was the Derby point system and the less impetus to get them ready. But we've had a lot of really flashy two-year-old horses run this meet. Greenlight Go's one of them. And to be honest with you, in a race like this, you could really start to go deep and get a little bit cute.
Yes.
I felt like he is the best horse. And I also there's a couple of negative angles on Godzilla, who, look, take nothing away from him. He was sensational in his debut. But Greenlight Go has already answered the next level question. And I just felt like it was, rather than doubling the cost of the ticket, let's take a stab.
I agree with that. Godzilla would be my third choice in here. I'm all on Greenlight Go, too. The other one I would really want to use... is Shoplifted, because we'll see. Here's a gauge too, folks. See what Kowalski does today. I like Kowalski. I know you like him a little bit too.
Yeah.
He's in the seventh today in the better of the two-year-old split races. I thought Shoplifted, we've got footage, I believe. Shoplifted up late with an absolute rush. Kowalski ran big that day too. I know Shoplifted got all the best of it. Maybe I'm just a sucker for two-year-olds that have shown an ability to stalk or close midsummer, early summer. He's it. I mean, there's pace in here. If you want to tell me Godzilla's faster than all of them, okay, but boy, he's going to have to run hard.
I tell you, so it's interesting because Shoplifted fits the same profile. So Steve Asmussen, with horses making their second career start off maiden wins in stakes events, he's 0 for 16.
That's a good stat.
And I thought that was really... And both Shoplifted and Godzilla follow that pattern.
Right.
Shoplifted was off the rail. The rail was deep last time out for him. He was well off the rail. I thought he had a fairly okay trip, all things considered. The other thing with Godzilla, pace figure-wise, and I'm a big believer in this. We all use all the information we can gather when building these tickets. I like to use Timeform US's colorings of whether or not paces are fast or slow. And code blue, meaning it was slow, is what the pace that Godzilla experienced last time. And numbers-wise, he's not even as fast as Greenlight Go is early. So much like, similar to like Chancelot, who ran fast and got away a little bit of an easy lead two back, Godzilla got away with an easy lead but didn't run fast early compared to some of these other horses. And I feel like he's going to be over bet a touch, and that was another reason why I went to the Greenlight Go. But I thought that Asmussen's stat was really interesting.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, 3-5 on debut in a 9-horse field. They might bury this horse again. He's the, you know, you tweeted it out, I think, or we talked about it, the fastest horse in the world. You know, we see one every summer.
Yeah.
This one delivered quickly by your side, a horse you called, you're familiar with. I thought he was sharp win in the Sanford, but all of a sudden, you know, he's undefeated, he's 2-for-2, he's a grade 3 winner over the track, and he's looking up at a lot of these.
He's 10 points slower on Byers in the 3 Greenlight Go. He's going to have to improve a bit, and he was off the pace last time out in the Sanford, again, was a code blue, bit of a soft pace. He was right on top of it. He's going to have to run faster.
Yeah, I agree. The 11th, you spread deep. I think budget players are going to absolutely hammer mine the coin. I don't think he has to win. I think Robert Falcone does a very good job. He's the most likely winner. But anybody tight on a budget is all with the eight. I think you have to use them. I like the fact you're using others. I do think there are others here you can use. Talk a little bit about what you've got going on.
Yeah, I was curious, claiming out of maiden claiming races for Falcone. He's actually 2-for-6 with a positive ROI. It's obviously not a big sample size. I thought that was interesting. You know, sort of, you don't see guys claim out of maiden claiming races too often. They usually wait till they sort of establish their form a little bit. I like Mind the Coin. I think he's obviously one of the clear-cut must-beat horses in this spot. But these are also maiden claimers, and bad horses win bad races. I want it to spread a little bit in here. Because this is the type of race where when they cross the wire and you miss it and it's some 8-to-1, you're like, how am I trimming horses like that in a race like this?
Skywriting to me is the interesting one. First time dirt off the claim for Linda Rice after the turf no-show last time, cutting back. Tough sequence. We talked about it at the start.
Yeah, Jerry Zero, who owns Skywriting, is a good friend of mine. I watched that last race with him. Got that loose lead. He actually had some turf breeding. I thought he was supposed to run a little bit better. It felt like if this horse had ability, Jerkins would have figured it out a little bit more. I don't like how the horse has gone off form. But that's a good post, and this is what they needed to do. Yeah. They needed to drop him down and cut him back.
Into sharp. Travis Stone, Empire Six Thoughts. Travis, appreciate you stopping by. We've got $100 gift certificate.
Oh, nice.
Jacob and Anthony. So,
nice. Need more food in my life.
Need more food in Saratoga is not a bad thing. Travis Stone, you're going to hear him real soon, folks, as we talk Churchill Downs a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, getting ready to ramp back up.
Yeah. So appreciate you stopping by. We're going to take our second break here on Saturdays at the Spa. When we come back, Mark Cassie is going to talk Perfect Alibi in the Spinaway. Stay tuned.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you. A special thanks to First Stop Fletcher. We got him yesterday. And then Travis Stone stopping by, talking a little Empire Six. Always good to hear Travis and his opinions. I know he's obviously the race caller at Churchill Downs, but a very, very sharp handicapper that knows what he's doing. And I'll immediately bring my next guest in, a guy that knows Travis pretty well. Mark Cassie, busy weekend. We were talking off the air, Kentucky Downs, and a lot of things going on, but front and center, Perfect Alibi in the Spinaway tomorrow. Definitely one of the better two-year-olds on the ground.
Yeah, she did. You know, she is. I mean, she's been impressive so far. I thought her race in the Adirondack was really good, and she's really flourished up here. She's a bigger, stronger filly today than she was a few weeks ago.
Do you find, I mean, you've been coming up here quite a while now. Do you find that horses, they get here and something clicks? Or
absolutely.
Is it individual? Or?
Well, some do better than right. others. There's nothing like the cool, yeah. crisp mornings. It just makes them happier.
Right.
No, horses definitely do well here. Some need, you know, do better than others. There's horses that like hot weather. There's horses that like cold weather.
She's been pretty precocious from the start. Good-looking debut winner at Churchill. We're going to show footage in a second at Belmont and here at Saratoga, but she ran off the screen at Churchill. Did you feel, has she always been that type of horse? Or?
No, that was a surprise.
Yeah, it was. Okay.
It was a surprise. She's about 16-3.
Okay.
She's extremely big for a two-year-old filly. I told Mr. Farmer the first time she ran, I said, we're going to run her. I've done all we can do. I do that a lot of mm-hmm. times. I kind of feel like you train so much and then it's time to run.
Right.
And I said, she'll probably, maybe she'll run third or fourth, come running at the end. And I think she won by 10.
Yeah.
So shows you what I know.
Brought her up to Belmont. We'll show footage of the Astoria. I said this to Travis just before he left. You know, when I see two-year-olds early spring and summer coming from off the pace and showing the ability to pass horses, I mean, you always look towards the future as well, but I think it's a really positive sign that, you know, you're not – a lot of these horses, as you know, they break. They don't. They win by five. They don't learn anything.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I always tell my riders I'd rather be a closing fourth than
right.
a dying third.
Sure.
I like for our horses to learn to run by horses, and you'll see that a lot of times. That's what we're attempting to do with our firsters. Now and then, I think it's just fast,
mm-hmm.
then we may gun them out there. But, this was an interesting race at Belmont. She looked at about the 3/8 pole like she was going to run nowhere. And then she made a good rally. Was not a great one, but a good one. I was satisfied with the
right.
race.
Brought her up here to the Adirondack. She made a very good rally that day. A lot going on in this race. We're going to show it. We know all the trouble that Frank Roquette's had and all that. And she's right back to battle against you again tomorrow, and we'll show it here. But, boy, your gal showed a lot of determination, Mark, to kind of sift their way through and get up again, stalking and passing horses late. I would think, A, you were very proud of this effort, and you probably left this race, can't wait to get to 7 furlongs in the spinaway.
You know, there was a lot said, and there's no question Frank's Rocket had some trouble along the way. But our filly... Also, she is. She's between horses, turning for home. She has nowhere to go. Not a lot of two-year-old fillies could handle that type
twice,
of pressure. Yeah. So I was proud of her. I was actually surprised she was showing so much speed because she had trained just kind of so-so into this race. Really didn't know what to think of her and showed some determination. I liked how she finished. And you're right. I said, well, 7/8 is not going to hurt our feelings.
Right. Behind a wall here, just kind of waiting to do her thing. Irad rode her for the first time this day.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere really to run, and here she comes.
And I thought the two fillies kind of went together, and both of them definitely had some issues along the way, but our filly showed a lot of determination and striding out really nicely at the wire, which is something you always like to see. Then afterwards, she won't even hardly make it out to the 8th. She's amazing.
Right.
When when she knows her job's done,
That's it.
It's over.
You said she surprised you, and now, you know, she's going to be one of the favorites in a grade one race. She's a grade two winner already. Is it just one of those things where once the light bulb goes on in the afternoon, they're just a different horse? Because you said she didn't really do much to tip off that we'd be maybe talking about the spinaway here?
No, and, you know, still you always worry about it.
Sure.
It's like I'm still I'm a believer in her yet, but the more she does it, the more I understand her. Sir Winston, the horse that won the Belmont, the same way. I would say to people, well, they say, well, what do you think, how he worked?
Right.
And I would say, well, for Sir Winston, it was an A work.
Mm-hmm.
For everybody else, it may have been a C-plus
right.
work. I would say the same thing for her. Normally, her works would be C's.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe she threw in a couple B pluses between races here. So, does it mean she's going to run better in
sure.
the spinaway? I hope so.
Got to see it. You mentioned she's 16-3, so a big filly that
you know, again, you're settling and you're stalking the pace, and you're by Sky Mesa out of a Maria's Mon Mare. I mean, you got to look ahead to the future too, in two turns and wherever you go. I mean, next year for that matter.
Yeah,
too.
I've had tremendous luck with Sky Mesa. Mm-hmm. They can do a little bit of anything. Then you add the Maria's Mon on the bottom side. Her pedigree intrigued me a lot. That's one of the reasons why we bought her.
Right.
Distance shouldn't be a problem. Sure. I'm hoping, you know, with a good effort here, to maybe then go to the Alcibiades or something.
Sense, yeah.
I like to get a two-turn race into them, and sometimes you'll see me do that versus maybe going to Belmont where we're going to stay at one turn.
Yeah, sharp one turn in the Frisette. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about Got Stormy, who was just nothing short of breathtaking, beating the boys up here in the four-star Dave, back on quick rest. You ran her right back. She's eyeing the Woodbine Mile. We're going to bring up footage of the four-star Dave here. What was your mindset going in? Was it kind of strike while the iron's hot here? I mean, you ran her right back on quick rest off an awesome performance the week before. De La Rose, I believe. But this was this was another step up altogether. And, boy, did
it
she
was,
answer
the bell. It was. She really – so what happened, we had her in – I forget what the name of the race is, the grade one on Belmont Day.
Just a game.
The Just a Game. We had her in the Just a Game, and a couple days before the Just a Game, she kicked the inside of her hock, just, I don't know, getting up from laying down or something. Mm-hmm. And it was sore. I talked to Gary about it, and I said, look, I don't feel comfortable running her. So we scratched her, got her up here, and she was trained so good. I said, this filly's never trained better to Gary. She won. When she won the De La Rose, it was amazing because – at the 316th pole, a horse opened up four, and Larry Coleman said, Tyler Gaffaloon hasn't moved his hands. And then when he asked her to go, she took off. It was a little warm that day. That's the only thing that concerned me. Well, right after the race, Gary, who is as game as Dick Tracy, says, why don't we go back in a week? And I said, well, I told him all the reasons why we shouldn't do it. And in all honesty, if it wasn't for him, I would have probably not done it.
Right.
But he said, well, I'll make it. What about if we enter her and see how she trains? And what was amazing is she trained better after the De La Rose than before it. So I said to him, I said, I can't tell you not to run her.
Right.
So we ran her.
I don't want to compare her to a horse that's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame someday in Teppan, but I, you know, at one point, the light bulb kind of went on with Teppan, and she just went on a tear. And I look at her up here this summer, and I'm kind of seeing that she was a nice horse, but now she's really reached another level up here.
I have a thing that I like doing, and Teppan is a perfect example. Teppan was a decent three-year-old, tailed off a little bit towards the end of the year, and Mr. Masterson and I talked about it, and I said, let's give this filly some time off and see. I think there's a time when three-year-olds need a rest to grow up, to be come from teenagers to adults. And obviously Teppan did that.
Yep.
And when she came back, we ran her, I think, in February or March at Gulfstream, and she was powerful. So I brought that same scenario up to Gary Barber. We did the same thing with World Approval. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, this filly's a really nice filly. Let's give her some time and bring her back. Well, when we brought her back at Gulfstream, I had her up at the training center. I sent her down a week before the race, and she ran. And I told Gary that day, I said, this filly reminds me a little bit of Teppan, what Teppan did. And she's just gotten better and better. So I'm proud of, you're right, you know, the Teppans, the World Approvals, her. They didn't start out great, but
they got there.
They've gotten there.
And they sustained
it. You know, a lot of people probably think, and now they're, of course, comparing her to Teppan, and I'm okay with that. And I know I've read some things. Well, how can you compare to Teppan? Well, she did win the four-star day off 7 days rest.
Yeah.
Broke the track record by a second and did something no filly's ever done. So is she Teppan? Maybe not yet. But,
no, but you just see that replay.
But
you're
starting
to say that.
Yeah, I think exactly. I think you're allowed to say that.
Right. Quickly, I want to show, we've got footage of Tappet to win, who you've got to be excited about going forward. And he did it the hard way, too, that day, because that was you did not want to be inside that day. And he really persevered. I thought this was a pretty impressive performance, the way he finished up, too. Thoughts about him going forward?
This is a horse I know he was the only horse that won on the rail.
Yeah.
I mean, he ran racehorse time too, 109.3. And it was a day that there was a lot to compare it to because of the big guns all running. I was extremely impressed. And you haven't seen the best of him yet. We sent this horse to Woodbine, as we often do. My guy David Adams, who's been with me over 25 years, he said, I think this horse could be special. So we ran him. We ran him on the grass because I thought I'd run him in the summer. And he got beat.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? Let's bring him to Saratoga, see how he likes the dirt.
The dirt. Yeah.
And I worked him out of the gate one morning, and about 5 or 6 days before this race, and I called Mrs. Weber, and I said, you going to be there Traverse Day? You should be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said, you might see something
right.
special. And I think he is.
Yeah. Iroquois, Breeders'
No, definitely or? Not the Iroquois. Right now we're looking at the Champagne.
Okay.
Or possibly...
So that is the one-turn race.
Or possibly the Breeders' Futurity.
Okay.
We took Classic Empire to the Breeders' Futurity. I like being able, if you're thinking Breeders' Cup, and we are thinking Breeders' Cup with him, I like to get a two-turn race. Right. So sometimes that lures me away.
Right.
But we're still looking at the Champagne. Mm-hmm. He's going to go to Belmont, train there for a little bit, but we'll see.
Quickly, before we let you go, the three-year-olds, War of Will, training, and then you said you got Sir Winston back. Got to be excited about
that. Yeah, War of Will's training very well. He really likes the cool weather. Okay. I've come to the conclusion it's one of the things that moves him up.
Okay.
He's going to breeze tomorrow, looking still at the PA Derby. Okay. And then Sir Winston's doing great. We're going to try to get him back. I'll probably bring him to New York maybe in 45 days or so. Try to get a race into him towards the end of the year in hopes of, now we've got the Pegasus, we've got Saudi Arabia. Right. There's some big races for him. And so we're going to try to do that with him.
A lot going on. Good. Yeah. Always good to talk about classic winners. You won two of them this year, Mark. We've got a $100 gift certificate for Pinnell's.
Thank you.
I'm sure you know where that is.
Oh, very much.
Appreciate you stopping by. Best of luck tomorrow at March to the Arch on Monday, too.
Yeah,
no rest for the weary.
No, March Arch ran a big race,
yeah.
I expect him to run well Monday.
Good. Well, best of luck tomorrow. Best of luck Monday. Best of luck in Kentucky going forward. I'm sure we'll hear a lot from these horses. They're primed and ready to roll. So we're going to bring you to one more break on Saturdays at the Spa. One more break for the season. How about that? When we come back, we'll wrap it all up. Stay tuned.
Winning your in series.
To win one of these challenge series is a way that we kind of map out our schedule throughout the year with our horses.
If you win one of the challenge races, you have a very good horse.
The King George, which is our winning in race, provides the top middle distance horse in Europe. We saw Highland Reel run in both races.
We know when we show up at the Breeders' Cup, we've got the world to beat, not just everybody in the United States. Breeders' Cup Challenge, win and you're in.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you, wrapping up another season at Saratoga. Thanks to Todd Pletcher. We got him yesterday. Travis Stone for stopping by. Mark Cassio. Always extra thanks to these guys for making the time to get over to the set on a Grade 1 Saturday at Saratoga. We know how difficult it can be and how crunched their time is. So from the start of the season to the end of the season and everyone in between, a real special thanks for everybody because, like I said, it's tough during Saratoga, so much going on. So a lot of people to thank. First and foremost, my producer, Teresa Gennaro, who gets all these people to sit in this chair next to me. Without her, none of this would be happening. So working the phones and the barns and all that, I can't say thank you enough to the job she did. And, of course, Brian DiRenzo and Mick Richards and Dino and Danny, all the guys behind the cameras and putting this all together and getting emails from me late at night about videos I need or in the morning and cobbing all this together and doing a great job doing it. So, guys, I appreciate you. Our sponsors as well, Pinnell's and Jacob and Anthony's, they've been with us from the start and really staunch supporters for us, and we appreciate them. So, and like I mentioned, the trainers and the guests, it's hard to get everybody here, and from the bottom to the top, everybody's worked so hard, and John Signor and Shannon and all my colleagues as well. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to put this on each and every Saturday. Well, we missed one, but that wasn't to no fault of our own. So thank you. Thank you for everybody for tuning in, and I will be back. You're stuck with me one more day. I get to work with Seth Merrill on Monday to wrap this season up. 40 days. It was a little longer, but it was a real privilege to be here with you each and every Saturday on Saturdays at the Spa. So it'll wrap it up for this season. I hope to see you out here at Woodward Day. I hope to see you for a pop or two at the Paddock Bar later, because that'll definitely be in play as well. Good luck today. Good luck tomorrow. Good luck Empire 6 on Monday as well. Amp up those Capital OTB Bets accounts, because big balloons on Monday. I can't wait. Hope to see you soon. Best of luck, everyone. Thank you.
You've been watching Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Nadeau. Saturdays at the Spa has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play. And Pinnell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.